the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When one understands the operating form, his problems of life are solved. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, 7:19, Bahunam Dhamanam Ante Yadavanam Pagyate Vasudeva Sarvabhiti Samahatma Sadurvabhava. After many births and deaths, he who is acting in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. Unquote. Last sentence of the whole chapter. A saint man, therefore, surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and thus gets out of the clutches of the illusory energy, Maya. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the fifth canto, 17th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Descent of the River Ganges. Read the verse again. Yan nirmitam kar yapi karma parvadim mayam jano yam guna sarga mohitaha naveda nistaranam yogam andasa tasmai namaste virali vilayoja jnatane. The illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead binds all of us conditioned souls to this material world. Therefore, without being favored by him, persons like us cannot understand how to get out of that illusory energy. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Lord, who is the cause of creation and annihilation. Three main things. The emphasis in the purport is going to the binding condition feature of the illusory energy maya, binding upon the conditioned soul who fails to recognize how the material energy is working, under whose direction the material energy is working. Rather, struggling for happiness without acknowledging the person behind the material energy, and thus becoming entangled, endlessly entangled. And even if there's some attempt to, I want to get out of here, I want to get unentangled, whether it's philosophers, or impersonalist, or scientist, or whoever it is, without acknowledging the person behind it, their efforts are futile. Prabhupada quotes two Bhagavad Gita verses, 15:7, where the living entity is struggling hard, anakshastani gandhiyani pakati stani harshati. Struggling very hard with the six senses, including the mind. And then again, another struggle verse, 7:19. No, it's not. That's not. So, living entities are struggling very hard to find happiness, but they're not finding happiness. But if they surrender to Krishna, they can cross beyond the struggle and find happiness. But that's rare. Bahunam Janmanam Ante, that's the verse that's quoted. So the emphasis is upon surrender to the Supreme, the one who's behind material nature. And that's the second part, is that's the position that Lord Shiva is taking in every single verse. He's saying some things in glorification of the Supreme Lord, but in every single verse it's surrender unto the Supreme Lord, surrender unto the Supreme Lord. please accept my obeisances, please accept my surrender, please accept me. And then other glorification, please accept me, just submission, consistent mood of submission. Back again to the binding feature, Prabhupada speaking of the material energy being like a computer or a machine upon which the living entity is being manipulated or controlled. He specifically uses the word computer as being handled, so I mean, you can't get more mechanical than that. So one may want the picture on the computer screen to change, but that requires the person who's operating the computer. We may want the circumstances of our life to be different. And so we try this and try that. It's futile. It's a fool's errand. The other example I was giving yesterday was trying to manipulate the shadow without the object that's casting the shadow. It's foolish. But not recognizing there's a place from which the shadow is cast, we're very absorbed in the shadow. We're absorbed in Maya, which is the shadow of the material, the spiritual potency. It's the chayade, it's the reflection or shadow of the spiritual potency. And we're part of the spiritual potency, tiny. But under the influence of delusion, because of our rebellious spirit towards the Supreme, delusion covers us. It's an endless struggle. Seeking for happiness in the shadow. It's very unfortunate, very foolish. But it's infallible. Another Bhagavad Gita verse that expresses this nicely, just exactly what Prabhupada is saying here, is from the 13th chapter, Purusha Prakriti Stoki Bhunte Prabhupati Chandana Karanam Guna Sandosha Sat Asadhyam Yoni Chalasu. Living entity, by their efforts to find happiness, they're binding themselves to the laws of material nature, and thus they're creating their own good fortune, misfortune. We can't blame Krishna. We can take responsibility ourselves for our choices that invite good fortune or misfortune. And of course, once situated on that machine, we're like strapped in. Can't get out. That's the previous verse. Karya Karana Kartrade. Hetu Prakriti Ruchate. Each of these words, Karya Karana Hetu, they're all indicative of causation. And material nature, once we forget Krishna and identify ourselves through false ego with matter, the body, the covering of the soul, material nature causes, depending upon the prompt of how we desire happiness, exactly as Prabhupada is saying here, material nature provides the body according to our desire for happiness. It's all arranged. You're like in remote control. Personality Godhead is in charge of the machine. And once we receive a particular body, then we're obliged to behave according to that body. At least as long as there's forgetfulness of Krishna, we're obliged. The purport Prabhupada describes the demigod, the dog, the human being. You get the body of a dog, and what do? You bark, and you wag your tail, and you chew bones. You do dog things, because you have a dog body. You get a demigod, you get a demigod, you do demigod things. You get a human body, you do human things. Depending upon the embodiment. It's a machine. Yantra, Rudhani, Mayaya. It's a machine made of the material nature, and the living entity is being carried along by that machine. Then something in the machine might break, and you try to get another replacement part, a machine part. Maybe they don't have it. You just have to do without it. Then certain parts you can't do without, so the body's conditioned to go into another machine. It's a system that, without transcendental knowledge, one is just being carried along by. Whatever it is that one is proposing in the form of knowledge or freedom or swaraj or independent, it's just varieties of foolishness. The second part is there's an alternative, and the alternative, at least in the last several verses, Lord Shiva is acknowledging there's a person who is the creator and the annihilator, and also the supreme person who is behind the machine. Let me surrender to him. So this karya, karana, kartrite, hetu, propertya, ushite. Behind the property gets the cause, there's the cause of that cause. There's the remote cause that gives power to the immediate cause. And then there's different varieties of causation. Pradhan Maya, Upadhan Maya. So it's all very scientific. It's empowered. Maya can't do anything without the empowerment of the Supreme Lord. And when the Supreme Lord, like by the touch of spirit, matter can move. But once matter is moving, the living entity that's situated on matter, the machine of matter, moves. And when we're born and we do things and we die, and we don't have to, we're just on a machine, thinking independent. I'm going to create my destiny. It's foolish. But recognizing there's a causation and the ultimate cause and the ultimate annihilator, the one who maintains, let me give my attention to him. That's what Lord Shiva is saying. Surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the cause of all causes. And the third thing is the position of Lord Shiva. He says it twice. Text 24. The illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead binds all of us conditioned souls to this material world. So Lord Shiva is counting himself amongst the conditioned souls bound by the illusory energy in this material world. And then again, the next. Therefore, without being favored by him, persons like us cannot understand how to get out of the illusory energy. The second part is depending upon mercy to get out, but he's also, again, counting himself amongst the conditioned souls. Now, Lord Shiva is, it is said in Gaudiya Vaishnava ways, there are two topics that are very complex and difficult to deeply understand. And Shiva Tattva is one and Guru Tattva is the other. It's very, very deep and profound subject. So Lord Shiva is not a conditioned soul, although he's characterizing himself as a conditioned soul. He's not a jiva. He's not a soul. He's in another category. He's Shivatattva. We're Jiva, Jivatattva. And his, he is Shivatattva. And that Shivatattva is one of a kind. There's not another. When Lord Shiva expands into various rudras and so forth, but it's the same tattva. They're just expansions of him. And then there's Vishnu tattva. So he's, I mean, living entities are called marginal, and then between the living entities and the Supreme Lord, there's another category, marginal. But he's characterizing himself as conditioned. He's not a conditioned soul, but conditioned. And the verse from Brahma Samhita that describes that is likening to milk in touch with the souring agent becomes yogurt. So similarly, Lord Shiva is the glands of Mahavishnu, not exactly the glands, he's the semblance of the glands, a little technical. But when Lord Shiva directly contacts Maya, or Durga, or Pradhan, Pradhanaya, he becomes influenced. And it's very, it's puzzling. How does, so here's Mahavishnu, and there's the glance of Mahavishnu, and then there's Maya. So it is said repeatedly in all the scriptures, Mahavishnu never directly contacts Maya. And therefore he's always in his Vishuddha Sattva position. But then there's the glance, Shambhu. So is the glance different than Mahavishnu, or is the glance of Mahavishnu the same as Mahavishnu? And then the glance contacts Pradhan and then becomes adulterated. No, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur describes this. The just as the souring agent adulterates milk and transforms it into curd, dahi. The adulterating principle, he says, has three parts, and there's something in relation to the living entity, something in relation to Maya, and something in relation to the spiritual potency. But here's what he says. The Lord Shiva is influenced to a small degree by the stupefying influence of the deluding potency. The stupefying, like yaya, yaya, asavavito, jiva, atmanam, tribunatmakam, in the language of the Bhagavatam. So the living entities become fully stupefied. And Lord Shiva is influenced to a slight degree by the stupefying influence of Maya. Unlike Mahavishnu, it's not at all influenced. And then the second, he says, is the principle of non-plentitude of the jiva. So the jiva is very tiny, non-plentitude. There's plenary, there's Vibhu and Anu. So the living entity is on a very tiny. Lord Shiva is influenced, the adulterated principle is that is, according to Bhaktisiddhanta, to a degree, to a slight degree, the non-plentitude of the living entity is influencing Lord Shiva. Although he's from Mahavishnu, it's milk that then becomes adulterated. So the adulterating principle is the slight degree of non-plentitude of the living entity. And the third he mentions specifically is the cognitive and blissful, so the chit and ananda portion of the internal potency. To a slight degree he has. Whereas Mahavishnu has in full. His internal potency, Ramadevi, manifests the fullness of Satchit Ananda, as does he, as his form, fullness of Satchit Ananda. Lord Shiva has a slight degree of Chit and Ananda. And therefore, he's counting himself as amongst the conditioned souls. So he's a slightly conditioned Shiva Tattva category personality. So whether it's Shiva Tattva or Jiva Tattva that's influenced by the stupefying or deluding potency of Maya, efforts from one's own side, this is important, efforts from one's own side is insufficient. Try and try and try. It's insufficient. What's necessary, the verse is stating specifically, is mercy. So this is our Gaudiya Vaishnava teaching. These two things are required. Effort and mercy. We require mercy, but along with mercy, there must be effort. But effort alone is not sufficient. A Christian way of saying like this, it's not by works alone one can attain the kingdom of God. So piety alone, good works, doesn't create freedom from the bondage of mind. It can create a prosperous situation just by the laws of karma. That's karya, karnam, kartrike, praktir, hetu, prakritir, uchite. Material energy has these laws. And when you pull this lever, that's going to move. You pull that lever and that's going to move. It's just, it's mechanical. But Krishna is not mechanical. Krishna is merciful. And if one approaches Krishna in a submissive calling for his mercy manner, and of course that's done through his merciful potency, Srimati Radharani, one appeals to him in that way, then one may be delivered. And not otherwise. By speculative knowledge, by good works, by meditation, by austerity, Prabhupada calls these high-grade activities, are never going to take one to the position of being again situated in one's relationship with Krishna. It's submission unto Krishna. Therefore, sarva-dharmam prajñājñānam ekam śaraṇam vraja, or as this verse is being quoted is, bahūnām janmanām ante jñānānām prapajate. And something that helps inspire prapajate or surrender to Krishna is having an understanding of who is Krishna and having an understanding of our circumstance. Our circumstances, we're bound by Maya that's under the control of Krishna. So surrender to Krishna, because he alone can release one from the bondage of Maya. If he says, Maya, leave this person alone. Just like exactly the message of Srimad Bhagavatam in Canto 1, Chapter 7, where Vyasadeva is describing his realization, where Maya is on the backside of the Supreme Lord. Normally we don't see the Supreme Lord because Maya is standing in between. We just see the illusory energy. We don't see who's behind the illusory energy. And we're struggling hard with the illusory energy. But we can easily cross beyond the illusory energy by surrendering to Krishna. So it's necessary to have some understanding of Krishna, so like the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita. Who is Krishna? And why should we surrender to Krishna? We should surrender to Krishna because he is the cause of all causes. The one who knows that surrenders to Krishna, at least an honest person. A dishonest person will not surrender to Krishna no matter what. But honesty or sanity is he who is the cause of all causes. We take shelter of him. It's like, you know, our Father. He who has given us life, given us whatever it is that we have, we offer our respect to that person. But ultimately, fathers can't do anything without the Supreme Father. And so we offer our respect to him and we surrender to him. And it's just civilized and sane and sensible. But it's also natural for the soul, the loving inclination that all souls have towards other entities. Even in the various species of life, there's some affinity or affection between one and another. It's natural. The mother duck and her ducklings, she's very protective of her little ducklings. And little ducklings are dependent upon mother duck. Where I stay in Devanagari, when we go for retreats, it's up on the hill at the Institute House. And I don't know if you've seen the place, but there's this big bay window. It's really, really nice. And outside the window, over on the other side, there's a valley. And then there's this big mountain range. It's really nice. The scenery is very, very nice. And just in the front yard, like there's a little wooden fence going around the property, and there's a groundhog family. And it's, you know, the groundhogs watch us and we watch the groundhogs. So there's a mother and a father and two little groundhogs. At least, you know, last year they had a couple of babies. So the father groundhog, he goes all over the place just like eating and eating and eating. He's really into eating. Because after a certain amount of time, when the weather changes, he's got to crawl down underneath in that hole in the ground and live the whole winter, like snoring, completely asleep. But he's got this now big, robust body, so he can live through the winter. And the mother groundhog does one of those things. She sits on her hind legs, and she's, you know, like a radar system. She's looking here and looking there to see if the little groundhogs can get out and eat something too, because they're going to have to live underground in the winter. And it's like, you know, it's a whole family thing. You know, then a car comes, and she runs down and tells the little kids, you know, you stay down until the coast is clear. Etc. So there are studies of bees and ants, and you know, they've got this whole system of how they do things. I don't know how they do things, but there are people who know how they do things. And they don't go to, you know, bee school and ant school and groundhog school. It's just, it's natural. The affinity is there. Given that particular embodiment, they act accordingly. They act like a bee or an ant or a groundhog or whatever, the dog or a demigod or a human being. And you know, we think we're special. But we're not. We're deluded. Then there's an option. The good fortune, by the grace of our founder Acharya, with much personal sacrifice and difficulty, going way out of his way to give us an opportunity to get out of a deluding position, a deluded position. So, naturally, there's some gratitude if we recognize what it is, the opportunity that's been given to us. And based upon those feelings of gratitude, then we stay in fidelity with the person and with the person's teachings, and become thus deserving of the descending mercy that can then get us out of it with the clutches of Maya. But it's not just doing things, changing behaviors. We're not the International Society for Behavior Modification Incorporated, but the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And so it's submission unto Krishna for a reason, good, thoughtful reason. And by doing that in a regulative way, it then becomes a spontaneous way, and then becomes an ecstatic way, and becomes love of God if we continue carefully and properly. The opportunity is being provided, and that's the message here. In the conclusion, just read the last sentence again in the purport. A sane man therefore surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and thus gets out of the clutches of the illusory energy, Maya. Any discussion? Yes?
So the Madhyama is looking for the innocent
and has the power of attorney to give Krishna. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, in this way, the independence of Krishna and simultaneously the independence of bhakti is preserved. Because if it was just causeless mercy, unqualified causeless mercy, everyone would be a devotee. And we don't see that everyone is a devotee. So it's a qualified causeless mercy through the conduct of the Vajra Bhakti. One was carrying bhakti and is enjoined to give that to innocent people. And not to give to those who are going to abuse it or make offense. Don't cast your pearls before a swine, kind of message. So we're enjoined to do like that. So causeless mercy with some qualifiers. So there's something from Krishna's side, but there's also the earlier part is something from our side. And from our side, sadhana is cultivation of Krishna, or thirst, and eagerness for mercy. Go ahead.
So, the follow-up is on this statement, that sadhana is the cultivation of thirst. I was wondering if you could maybe elaborate that a little bit, because, you know, we're doing our sadhana, we're doing chanting, studying, and I'm not seeing an increase in myself, an increase in thirst for, you know, our eagerness, for Krishna's mercy.
Yes and no. Maybe not to your satisfaction. But compare thirst today with thirst 1 year ago, or whatever, go further back in time. And there's certainly some progression. And there's unsteadiness, sometimes more, sometimes less. That's just the stage of cultivation or development. So the degree to which there is submission, the degree to which we accept Tapo Dinyam, divine austerity, submitting ourselves to those processes by which the wet wood becomes dry wood. The tendency for material enjoyment is diminished by choice, not just, if the submission is not just the activity. In other words, persons can be in a deprived state and live very austerely, but not become God conscious. So it's Tapo Divyam helps to go further in the thirst category. Like rising early, so forth, our little austerities. They're little. It's not like Dhruva Maharaj austerities. They're little austerities. And that helps in the thirst category. So the operative factor is the submission or the eagerness or the thirst. So we're enjoying utsaha. First utsaha. Then nishchaya, dhairya. So the teachings are there to take us further and further. That's sadhana, this cultivation of that quality. And the opposite is asati, Krishna. Again, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, one of the sources of anarthas is asati Krishna, affinity or thirst for the temporary. So we're cultivating the thirst for sat, as opposed to asat. Jitendriya.
Yes, Maharaj. If you notice the verse 15, it says here, the living enemy is struggling very hard against the senses. Says with the senses of the holy mind. It's like a whisper.
see what he has to say about it.
Okay.
Maybe just an editing thing. Maybe it's just an editing matter, you know, detail.
I was interested in what you're saying, you know, consensus, but maybe please come to Christian consciousness, certain restrictions may apply.
Yeah, like that. I remember that.
Thank you.
Pretty. Speak slowly.
My concern is, they said, Krishna says in this, if you surrender, then you can overcome this material.
If you surrender unto Krishna, then
you can overcome.
You can cross beyond. Okay.
So the question is, how to surrender?
How to surrender?
Surrender which way?
Just jump in the pool. There's six angas of surrender. You know what they are. Padma Purana sits in nectar devotion. Accepting things favorable, rejecting things unfavorable, seeing the Lord as one's protector, seeing the Lord as one's maintainer, surrendering everything to the Supreme Lord, like that list of six angas of surrender. So each one, pay, you know, attention to each one. Like, you know, you're working and maintaining your family. So surrender means Krishna is maintaining me and my family by giving me the ability and the opportunity and et cetera, et cetera. Without which, there's no maintenance. So it's actually Krishna, not me, that's maintaining. And the consciousness of surrender is that. So even while you're doing your household duty, Krishna is maintaining. Like, so that's cultivation of that is a cultivation of surrender. Is part of you. How to? There's different elements because it's a necessity. We need maintenance. Not only householders need maintenance. Everyone needs maintenance. And Krishna is our maintainer. And the attitude, the mood of surrender is that Krishna is my maintainer. I'm serving Krishna and Krishna is maintaining me. Not I worship Krishna, that I maintain myself. I have these two different things. I worship Krishna and that I maintain myself. It's called secular. There's the spiritual part of my life and there's the worldly part of my life. And then I have this dilemma about how do I balance the spiritual part and the worldly part of my life. That's illusory. It's everything is service to Krishna in the mood of surrender, everything. In protection, etc. Defending, necessity. But Krishna is my protector. I may do some things, I put a lock on my door. But Krishna is my protector, it's not the lock on the door, etc. Yes.
Hare Krishna, thank you for your class. Can you briefly explain the relationship between simplicity and less physical suffering, sincerity and submission? I'm having a hard time with that.
Sincerity and submission and the relationship?
Yes, in terms of surrendering to Krishna.
In terms of surrendering to Krishna.
Yes, I mean, like, Bhagavad Gita says that once surrendered to Krishna, you reward the harmony.
Yes.
Now, my question is sincerity a component of submission?
Is there any?
Is simplicity, sincerity, is a...
Sure. So, let's just say... Somebody comes to the temple on a Sunday, or they come on a weekday. We see this all the time. They come and they stand before this altar, that altar, that altar, and often they stand before Ramchandra, and they fold their hands, they put something in the hundi box, and they leave. Now that's a behavior.
there's a surrender to do that, because they're here doing that instead of something else. So it may be with a religious purpose. It may be with a motivated religious purpose. If I do this, I'm going to get that. And different people have ideas of what that is. So there's surrender, but then the understanding and the sincerity may be, you know, all kinds of different. All kinds of different. And you know, so that for us, we're paying obeisances before each of the altars and screening the deity's time. We can do it, you know, as the way that everybody does it, and we can do it consciously. And we can do it with fervent prayer. So there's, besides the surrender, there's surrender involved in any expression of devotion to the Supreme Lord, and then there's a quality of that. The sincerity with which we're doing that and the purpose for which we're doing that. But there's surrender involved in just in the behavior, and then there's the consciousness behind the behavior component. Okay. And you can't just, it's not just like that. There's a bucket over here, and there's a bucket over here, and there's no connection. It's just like two different buckets. That's not the, that's not an accurate picture. But each of the terms, surrender, has a certain connotation. Sincerity has its connotation, and they certainly connect. Anything else? Okay. So we're told,
Yeah.